Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hi, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Tim. First, I'd like to start thanking people. Patrick, who I bumped into on the street, in Commercial Street in Provincetown, who introduced me to this wonderful group of people out here that I know is my LA family. I'd like to thank David and the committee for asking me to come out here and speak. It's an incredible honor. I can think of 1,000 people do much better job than I would up here. I'm like, you guys are slumming it. I'm wicked sorry about that. I tried to warn them. I'm glad that they put the potted plant up here so I got someplace to puke, because this, I'm telling you guys, I wear armor to work, and this is the most scared I've been since I came home from the Persian Gulf. This is, you guys are horrifying. I'm just mostly scared that Jeffrey's going to make fun of my shoes. I am an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I grew up in a town north of Boston called Lowell, Massachusetts. You guys ever heard of that? There's some dope fiends here. Nice. Lowell's claim to fame is Jack Kerouac and the Industrial Revolution, and both are dead. Jack Kerouac's book was On the Road, and if you ever been to Lowell, you know why he hit the road. It's a tough, tough, tough little town. That movie, The Fighter, with Christian Bale and Mark Wahlberg, that's Lowell. That's Lowell. One of the characters featured in that movie is actually my third cousin, and he was the savage crackhead. So there's my proud lineage. Thanks, Mom. I grew up in that town in that era, in the late 70s and 80s, and I made it to about 12, maybe 13, before I really just needed a drink. I'm the youngest of five. My brother Matty is six minutes older than me, and he never stopped lording that over me. I lord it over him now that we're in our 40s, but he's got the hairline to match it, too. So anyway, growing up there, it was just a tough blue-collar, middle-class New England town. And you were either a wrestler or a boxer or a convict. And I was too pretty for prison. And so I tried my hand at everything else. But anyway, one day in particular, it was in August, probably August afternoon on a Saturday, I was walking up to the top of Fort Hill Park with my two friends, Bob and Scott. And as walking up to the top of Fort Hill Park, it was probably 1979, 78, somewhere around there. 79, 80. I'm wearing corduroys. It's August. I'm sweating a lot. And I usually say what I'm sweating like, but they won't let me say that anymore, so I gotta keep it vanilla. Anyway, so I'm sweating like you know, that, and we're walking up to the top of this hill, and I'm thinking to myself as I'm walking up there with Bob and Scott, I'm like, you know, I don't really like Bob. He's just kind of a dick, and he's, you know, he's like sporto, wrestler, jock, dude, bro, and I hate that, and, you know, and his brother Scott is just as sycophant freaking fruit fly. He just is like, yeah, Bob, okay, Bob, sure, Bob, okay, Bob. And then there's me, who was never really good at anything. Both of these two are natural born athletes, and I was a natural born suck. I couldn't do anything right. And at least that's what I thought. That's how I felt. I came much later in life, I came to find out that these inward feelings are not necessarily outward realities, but that didn't come till much later. As I'm walking to the top, and I'm walking up with these two guys who I don't much care for, who I'm pretty sure don't much care for me, but they answered the phone that day, so that's who you hang out with, right? So we're walking up. It's Fort Hill Park. It's a wooded area. It's got this tall grass, and the grass is loaded with ticks, and I can feel the ticks. I know there are ticks. I got this thing about ticks, and I'm just like crawling up this hill, and I'm sweating like a fat kid playing dodgeball. And freaking sweat's going down the back, down the center of my back, to the crack of my ass, and I feel it going down my freaking thigh, and I'm like, oh, this, I hate my life. And it's Saturday. This is Saturday. I'm 13 years old, you know? Like, and it's, I mean, you're picking up a theme here, you know? My life just wasn't firing on all eight pistons, man. There's something missing. I'm the glass half empty guy. Ask me what's wrong. I'll tell you. I got a list of what's wrong. And don't ask me one bit about how to fix it. I just know what's wrong with it. So we climb this hill. We get to the top. We get the Bud Tall Boys that I stole from my brother Stevie. He had them a cooler under the porch. I stole them from his cooler under the porch. I brought them up to the roof of the porch where they cooked in the sun for 2 weeks before we got to them. I didn't know. And I didn't. I didn't know skunked. I didn't know that happened. So we took these hot beers up to Fort Hill Park, and now we're drinking these rancid freaking things. I mean, like Budweiser doesn't suck quite bad enough. Let's cook it for another couple weeks. You know? So I'm choking this goat piss back, trying not to throw up in my mouth. And I'm just like, it's refreshing, you know? And I'm watching Bob and Scott, and they're drinking theirs, and they both got this look on their face like our dads used to have, you know, like, you know, and we're just faking it, you know. I knew then, even then, to fake it till I freaking made it. And it just, that's life. And it's just irritable, and it doesn't fit right. My skin doesn't fit right. There's not enough. It's not loud enough. It's not bright enough. It's not soft enough. It's not hard enough. I'm not tall enough. I'm not big enough. I'm not enough. It's not enough. That was the theme. I'm looking out over the horizon of this so-called city, the bucolic vista that is Lowell, 1979. And it's these smoldering frickin' mills that have been set fire through very suspicious circumstances, by the way, that have been set fire to through the duration of the 70s and the better part of the 80s. And this is my city. This is where I grew up, this hellhole. You know, it's like Glasgow without the cool accent, you know? So, and this, like I said, I'm 13, man. I mean, a 13-year-old kid shouldn't have quite such a bleak frickin' outlook on life. You know what I'm saying? I got that first beer down without throwing up in my mouth, and I was proud of that accomplishment. So, and as if finishing that filthy thing wasn't enough of a warning sign, I opened the second. All right? There's the qualification right there. I belong in AA automatically. So I opened the second, I choked that thing back, and about two-thirds halfway through that, happened. We weigh 80 pounds. You're sweating like a $2 hooker. A beer and a half goes to you pretty quick. And a beer and a half, and all of a sudden, I look out over the majesty the bucolic vista, this majestic sight to behold, bedrock of the Industrial Revolution happened right here. We got a lot to be proud of, boys, man. Bob, Scott, I can love you guys, man. I mean it, I'd take a bullet for you, bro. Bullet. I'm some freaking bourgeois middle class little white kid. What the fuck do I know about a bullet? So I'm talking, what happened? Nothing changed, but everything was different. That's what alcohol did. And anyone here, I'm looking out over the room, and there are people out here who know what I'm talking about. And that is really the only qualification I have. Alcohol made my life fit. Alcohol was the secret ingredient to life. How could you feel this and not want to feel it all the time? What's the matter with you? I look at people who say, like, I'm starting to feel it, I'm done. What? I want to slap them. I'm like, come here. you're doing it wrong, you know? It's just like, I never understood people who could handle life sober. I couldn't understand it. And that was a pattern that followed. Suffice to say, I made it a point to get back to Fort Hill Park every single chance I got, and I'm using that metaphorically. I needed that buzz. I needed that feeling. I discovered the secret of life, and I will find it again. I need this feeling. I knew it intuitively. I knew it in my gut. This wasn't just a passing fancy. This wasn't about a freaking party, and it wasn't because I was thirsty. This was the secret of life. And I deeply suspect that Bob and Scott did not have that experience. Because they tossed the second half of their second beer, and they both went home, and I suspect probably threw up. But I started plotting out, I had delusions of grandeur, of how this is going to change my entire life. And from the very beginning, I knew that this is something I needed to find, I needed to continue. And if you could come and join me, welcome. And if not, piss up a rope. I don't need you. You know? And so I did. I pursued that. Prior to that afternoon, I was involved in student government. No shit, I really was. Why is that funny? That's not funny. I was popular. Anyway, not really. No one else ran. No one else gave a shit. I was what dorks did. I was a dork. So, I gave up on student government. I gave up on track. I gave up on swimming. I gave up on everything else. I was a marginal student, which is to say I was a rock. I'm dyslexic, and I have the attention span of a ferret on a double espresso. So it's real, real tough, you know, real tough. And I got dyslexia. I mean, like alphabet soup. You show me one paragraph of dense text, and I got nothing. I got nothing. No idea what that says. So school sucked. They said I had a learning disability. I said they had a teaching disability. We agreed to disagree, and they agreed to pass me by the hair of my chinny chin chin. I got out of Lowell High School, and that was a good place to get out of, you know. Harvard, MIT, Stanford, they weren't beating my door down. I started getting jobs around town, and then one morning my buddy Charlie calls me up. He says, yeah, Timmy, we're talking about, you know, I'm going down to talk to the Army recruiters. And I thought that was hilarious because Charlie is a wicked pothead, and I'm like wake and bake every single day. This kid used to pick me up every morning for school high as a lab rat. It was awesome. And he was a straight-A student, which I found miraculous. You know, I'm like, how do you do that? You know, I'm going in straight, and I can't do it. But so we go down to the Army recruiting office, and you know, the Army recruiter's like, come on in, Tim, Chuck, how you doing? I'm Bob. This is Fred. We're going to get you guys a coffee. How'd you like a Coke? And I'm like, don't touch it. You know, they're going to roofie us. There's something in that. They're way too nice. We're a couple of scrubs. I haven't bathed yet. Okay, I stink, I look like a freaking homeless little weasel, and you're kissing my ass? What's wrong with you, bro? I'm out of here. Back out of here, Charlie. Let's go. You know, went into the Navy recruiting office, very much of the same thing. Kissing my ass. What's wrong with you? There's something up. What are you after? What are you looking for? I don't want no part of this. Let's go. Air Force, not quite so much. Air Force took one look at my grade point average, and they were like, and he's like, the Marines are down the hall. And they gestured, you know, because they clearly had a Rhodes Scholar on their hands. And so I went down to the Marine recruiting office, and they wanted no part of me. I needed to join, you know. They actually told me, get out. I was like, guys, you don't understand. I wanted to be a Marine my whole life, you know. And it's amazing because it's like 11 o'clock in the morning, and at 10 a.m. that day, I had no idea what I was going to do with my day, let alone what I wanted for the rest of my life. But Groucho Marx said one time, and I do hold this to be gospel truth, I never wanted to be a member of any club that would have me as a member. And the Marine Corps told me to piss off, so I needed to join the Marines. I took the ASVAB once, which is the basic entrance exam, which that Fern right there could take and pass and probably become a captain, okay? I had to take it three times, okay? My recruiter called me a rock in disguise. I finally, three was a charm. I got hired. The Marine Corps took me. Thank God. They made me a rifleman, and off I went. And the Marines were awful. I didn't realize I was detoxing in boot camp. I just thought I was really scared because I was shaking like a hound shitting razor blades the whole time, you know? And it's, you know, and I'm my head's racing and all the noise. You remember the noise in my head walking up Fort Hill Park, the he sucks, she sucks, this sucks, that sucks. Well, all that noise is back because my treatment is gone. I'm not a problem drinker. I'm a problem sober. We've established that. And now you took away the solution to my problem, sobriety. And you throw on top, you sprinkle three drill instructors on top of that. That was just a little slice of paradise, you know? And I got these three assholes screaming at me from every direction, and I'm like, I died and went to hell, you know? And the only reason I graduated was because it was the easiest way to get off that island. It was the only reason I graduated. It wasn't mom, it wasn't apple pie, it wasn't the American way, the flag. It was I had to get the fuck out of here as soon as humanly possible. And the quickest way to do that was to just graduate. So I did it. I got in the Marine Corps. If you guys didn't know this, the Marines like to drink a bit. They were actually founded in a tavern. I shit you not. They founded in Tun Tavern, Philadelphia, PA, 1775. These guys like to drink quite a bit. My drinking scared them. They were like, we like to drink, you suck at this, you can't drink with us anymore. And they sent me to detox, all right? Sent me to detox, I went to detox. That was an experience to behold. Detox in the, what was it, 89, 90. It was detox in 1990, And they were talking about my inner child, and they were talking about, oh, no shit. I didn't even know I had a freaking inner child. I hope it's a boy, you know? You know, it's like, you know, got my inner child, and now we're going to, you know, talk about my feelings, because those matter, you know. Feelings matter.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
I freaking love shrinks. It is so much fun. So I'm talking about my feelings like they matter, and I'm talking about my inner child like it freaking exists. And I'm talking about all this other horse shit that has absolutely nothing to do with alcoholism, by the way. And they're treating it like it does. Because that's all they got. They can't teach spirituality in the Marine Corps base hospital, which was run by the U.S. Navy. And if you thought the Marines were screwed up, the U.S. Navy got us beat by a long shot. So we're sitting there, and we're talking about inner children. We're talking about our feelings. We're talking about all this nonsense. And most guys are in there just trying to fake it till they make it. They're trying to get through it because their command sent them there, because it was either go to rehab or go to the brig. And that was the ultimatum I got. So I went. And then they sent us out to these meetings in Jacksonville, North Carolina. I went out to the meetings in Jacksonville, North Carolina, and they were like, boy, you won't get sober, you better get honest. And I was like, why are you talking like that? because I'm an asshole. So I don't understand anything, so I'm going to start making fun of it. Sarcasm is one of my favorite weapons. So I'm listening to these people tell me I got to get honest, and you just keep coming. You sit in the front row and you wait for the miracle. And I'm like, oh, we got miracles. Roger that. Cool beans. What kind of miracle? You know, like, you know, loaves, fishes, you know, we walking on water. What kind of miracle? I read about these things. I was raised in a church, you know, so let's hear it. What kind of miracles? Oh, just sit and you wait. I'm like, oh, well, roger that. So you don't know, do you? You're telling me to wait for a miracle? What miracle? Okay, we'll get back to that. So I sit there and I listen. Why? Because I have to, because I have no choice, because if I don't, I'm going to the brig. So I'm playing their little game. And then the Gulf War starts, and I go off to the Gulf War We fought over there. We won over there. We came home. A bunch of guys got really sick. A bunch of guys started having families, and all their kids were all really sick, and it was really messed up, and a lot of guys were really bent up, and I got pretty bent up myself. And it took me a long time to come out of that little tailspin. This is the first time I actually shared this from the podium, but it did. It did affect me in a great way. I couldn't be around people. I couldn't feel safe around people. I couldn't trust people. And here's the thing. Alcoholics Anonymous, they never pushed me away. They never turned me away. I was a prick, okay? I was the most unlovely creature you could ever hope to meet. And Alcoholics Anonymous never turned me away. No one ever said, get out. You know what? We're sick of you. We're sick of your sarcasm. We're sick of your freaking face and your voice. Piss off. No one ever said that. I kept coming. I kept making fun of it because I just couldn't get it. You know, I was still sober. Why? Spite. I was sober out of spite because I heard some old guy say, I don't give that kid 6 months. I was like, oh, yeah? I'll bury you, old man. Come get me. I'm going to dig in like a freaking tick. And I stayed sober out of spite. I do not recommend that. I stayed sober out of spite. I stayed sober out of some twisted sense of loyalty to my dad because my dad died of this disease while I was in the Gulf War. My dad was my hero. He was my everything. He was the guy I wanted to be if I grew up. And he died while I was over there. Okay. And what? Oh, okay. Never mind. Sorry. Got to stay talking to me. I see dead people. So I told you, man, I get the attention span of a gnat. It's really, you know, like shiny things. I'm like, hold up, you know. So I lost my dad in the Gulf War, and I got kind of bent up about that, and I stayed sober out of some twisted sense of loyalty to him. And that, coupled with spite, coupled with ego. And then on top of that, you sprinkle in a little bit of using AA as a punching bag or a dating service. Because that's really where you want to go looking for a boyfriend. Yeah, in the dented can aisle. Yeah. What? What could possibly go wrong in here? What could possibly go wrong? No, please. Mazel tov. Guys, knock yourself the frick out. Honestly, it's just a beautiful thing. You know? You're going to have awesome sex for about a week, and then you're going to try to kill each other. I'm not judging. This is my experience. I wouldn't dream of trying to deprive you of that. Get a mouth guard and a helmet. That's all I can say. So I used AA, and I used rage, and I used sex, and there's a whole bunch of the brain manufactures some really, really top shelf drugs. It really does. Endorphins, adrenaline, all this stuff. Like, it just, I mean, there's a great little pharmacy at work up there, and you just got to hit the right buttons. You know, and you fly off into a little temper tantrum, and all these, it's just this flood, and it's like, yeah, baby, this is my juice. So that's how you do stay sober for 14 years and 8 months without a solution. Yeah. Dry, sick, fuck. Right here. When I first got an AA, the first thing I needed a freaking J-O-B. I gotta get a job, and I gotta get some freaking clothes that are not green. I'm out of the Marine Corps. I'm home from the war. I can actually sit in company with civilized people again. So now we gotta get some duckies in a row here. We gotta get the outside. We gotta paint that trash can. So now I got myself a J-O-B. I got myself a job. I'm working for the city of Boston. Yahtzee! Freaking Irish sweepstakes, kid. Right? I'm driving around Boston in a fly ride that the city's paying for, and I get to do all kinds of cool stuff, and it's just awesome. I get lost. I lost my complete train of thought. It's right out the window. Like, see ya. Pat, go find that, will you, please? So I got the job in Boston. I got the apartment in Boston. I got a decent car. I'm dating a lot. I'm getting around, and I'm having a blast, you know? Everything's right, because I'm not hurting anyone, right? And I'm sober, because sober's better. That's what they say in Boston AA. At least that's what they said back then. Thank God they stopped that nonsense. Because you know what? Sober's better. Sober's not better. Not for an alcoholic. If you're a problem drinker, sober's better. You come in here, you put the booze away, plug in the jug, goose hung high, you're good to go. Yeah, well, that ain't alcoholism. Alcoholism is when you put the plug in the jug and life gets real colorful. Alcoholism is when you put the plug in the jug and you start contemplating the lives of your family and friends. You sit me behind the wheel of a car if I'm not in fit spiritual condition and watch the homicide. Just watch the bloodthirst come out. You know, I'm not fit. I'm an alcoholic. Booze was not my problem. If booze were my problem, when I quit drinking in September 1990, if booze were my problem, logic would dictate I have no more problem. I've been separated for almost a decade and a half. If I'm a decade and a half, if I'm a decade and a half in remission from any disease, cancer, whatever, well, then you'd say you're effectively cured. So I'm a decade and a half in remission from this problem, alcohol. Why am I praying for someone to shoot me? Why am I going to work not wearing my vest, praying for someone to shoot me? Why am I volunteering for the SWAT team? Why am I volunteering for the motorcycle unit? Why am I waiting for my turn to die? The faith that I was raised in said, if you kill yourself, you're going to hell. And if you think this place sucks, wait till you try on hell. Roger that. Don't want to go to hell. So I'll just stick it out and wait my turn. Guys, this was my idea of recovery. This is my idea of sobriety. This was my idea of life. Sober, without a solution. I was sick and suffering alcoholic, and I was dying from my recovery. The night came, it was New Year's Eve, 2006, and I'm assigned to special operations. I take the motorcycle home every night. It was a warm year that year, so we could ride the motorcycles in January, and I took the bike home, and I pulled it into the garage. And I put all my gear away, and I had the pistol on the counter, and I was just thinking, I can't do it again. I can't do it anymore. I'm sick. I can't stand my life. I filled every little box. All the things. You remember? You remember from detox or the spin dry or whatever, wherever they sent you, Betty Ford, who, whatever. You know, and they're like, make out your wish list. I wish you'd shut up. There, you know? I hate that schmaltzy crap. I really do. It drives me up a freaking wall. Anyway, so I make up my wish list, and it was the car, it was the job, it was the body, it was the looks, it was the this, it was the hair, it was the da-da-da-da, you name it. From the absurd to the sublime, I filled every little box. I was like, what is it? What is it? What am I missing? Where's the magic ingredient? Because if sober's better, why am I praying to die? I never prayed to die when I was drunk. I never prayed for someone to shoot me. And then I was like, you know what? I can't do it. I'm taking the pistol. So I picked up the pistol off the counter. And then just in a moment that, you know, this old saying that drunk God looks out for drunks, fools, and children. And that night I was batting 1,000. And the voice just came into my head. It's like, there's vodka in the freezer. Your roommate drinks. You know, there's Absolut. It's frozen. Good. And I was like, Roger that. You know, if I'm going to go out, we're going to make a mess of the freaking kitchen with my brains, I might as well have a little bit of a buzz on, right? I mean, what's the point? So I go out, I grab a little vodka, and no sooner did it hit my lips, welcome back to Fort Hill Park, boys and girls. Whoa, what was that all about? Put that pistol away. Jesus Christ, that could have freaking hurt somebody. What the fuck? How much paperwork would... Oh, my God, you don't even want to know. I started drinking, and I started drinking rather calmly. First couple of highballs, no problem. And you know the rest. Inside of 10 months, it's every day. I've destroyed two motorcycles by mistake. By mistake. It's just like, boom, oh, where is it? It's skidding next to you on your back. You know, like, hey, motorcycle. And then it just does these somersaults. They're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to just roll on the tires. They're not supposed to go side over side. They yelled at me. I got going for 10 months. I drank every day for 10 months, and that was my best bet. I'm going to just try to keep the reins on this for these 10 months, and we'll be all right. We'll be all right. And it wasn't, man. It was, oh my God. It was like trying to hold a tiger by the tail. I mean, whew. How's that old saying go? When you dance with a 900-pound gorilla, you ain't done till he's done. And it wasn't dance either. I'm trying to keep it Disney in here. You know what I'm saying, all right? Hey. I feel pretty. So anyway, yeah, he's gay. Anyway, see, I told you, Jeffrey. Anyway, the party came to a close after I wrecked the last motorcycle. They were just like, what do you think you're doing? And I was like, I'm fine. Don't worry about it. They were like, you're not fine, and we are worried about it. And this happens again. We're going to have a little talk. I was like, yeah, right, whatever. So I went home, and I went back to my gin mill, and I'm sitting there in my gin mill because no one throws a cop out of a bar. It's 4 a.m. I'm still drinking, and I'm sitting there, and I'm looking across the bar, and who's the asshole who decided to put mirrors in bars? I want to meet that ass clown. Holy sh! What a bad idea. Really? A mirror in a bar? What's the matter with you? Don't do that. It's not a gym. I don't want to see what I'm doing here. I check my form, you know? So I look across the mirror in the bar. And it was just, look at the fucking state of you. Look at what happened to you. There's a coke deal going on three stools down. Three stools away from me. They know I'm a cop or a cop. And they don't care. Why? Because I'm a fraction of a cop. I'm a fraction of a man. I used to be Timmy Hancock. And now I'm just this piss-soaked freaking drunk. The clarity of the gravity of my situation came to me as though I was stone sober. It came to me with a clarity and a light in my eye that I cannot explain, that chemically should not have been physically possible with the amount of vodka I had in my system at that time. And it did. And I call that grace. The definition of grace, as I understand it, is an unmerited gift. The clarity of that moment sat with me. I stood up from that bar and I did something that I never do, and I walked away from a mostly full glass of vodka and I walked out. The next day, I'm on my way home from work and I'm trying to think, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? I can't do this. I can't go back into AA. I can't go back into AA. I mean, I shit all over AA. I used it as a dating service and a punching bag and the brunt of every joke. I disrespected AA in immeasurable ways. How could I think, how could I possibly be that audacious to go back to those people and ask them to accept me one more time? I got balls like burglars, guys, but I ain't that ballsy. I can't do that. So I was kind of stuck. I was between a rock and a hard place. And you know that old saying that God will not do for you? God will do for you what you cannot do for yourself. However, he will not do for you that which you can. Fact. All right. I'm on my way home from work. I'm on the motorcycle. I'm at Tedeschi's. By the way, what time am I wrapping up? 10? Oh, roger that. I'm halfway there. Nice. So, I'm on my way home from work. I'm at Tedeschi's. Tedeschi's is a convenience store in Boston. And I roll up on the bike, and I'm at Tedeschi's, and I walk in, and everyone's leaving. What's up? Did someone pull a fire alarm? Okay. I'm just checking. So I walk into Tedeschi's, and there's this guy there, the guy that I recognize from AA with a big, bright red face. And this guy is like the savior of Boston AA. He is like putting on commitments in prisons, and he's like curing the sick and healing the lame. And I mean, he's just, I wanted to punch this guy in the face so bad, you know. He's that guy who's always having a wonderful day, and he's always blessed, and I always want to just choke him, you know, because I'm not. You know, I'm not, and I never had, and I thought he was just doing it to make fun of me. And I do that, you know, I make myself the center of shit that I have no part of. Anyway, so I see this guy there, and he's like, "Hey, Tim, how you doing?" I'm like, "Hey, Patty, what's up, guy?" He says, "We're looking for this meeting. It's over on North Harbor in Austin." I'm like, "Yeah, it's four lights down. Take a left. You'll see it about three blocks down." He goes, "Yeah, well, you know, we were down that way. We couldn't see it. We're not sure." And I was like, "Patty, just four lights down, take a left, it's right there, you can't miss it." "Yeah, you know, we're not showing off, for crying out loud, Patty, just get in the car, follow me." So as we're driving, I'm leading him down to this meeting, and it dawns on me that he's probably going to try to talk me into going into this meeting, and I want no freaking part of that, you know. So I got to start sorting out my lies, of course, you know, because, like, I couldn't possibly go in. It wouldn't be appropriate at all. You know, I'm dressed like I'm invading Poland, you know, and it's just not, you know, I'm in uniform and the motorcycle and to scare people. And we drive by the church. I see his headlights dip in from my rearview mirror, and I don't hear a honk, or I don't get a wave or a thanks, Timmy, or a text or nothing. You know, you're already there, right? You already know. I'm bullshit. I'm like, "Oh, really? Yeah, Patty. Yeah, you get in there all right?" No, really, I'm all freaking set. No, fine. Yeah, no, I don't want to go to the meeting. Oh, like I need your permission? Yeah, thanks, dude. No, good, I'm good. Yeah, you know what? I'm going. How's that? I couldn't have done that for myself. I'm not that clever, all right? There's one of our prayers. I want to say the seven-step prayers is remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows, right? And the important part of that is in every single defect of character so that I can walk on water and shit Tiffany cufflinks. It's every single defect of character that's in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Stop there, all right? I'm still got a lot of character defects, thank God. Because he's still using some of them, you see? I'm a resentment factory. He knows this. He set that up beautifully, okay? I walked into that meeting. It's 10 minutes, roger that. I walked into that meeting. What do I got? I got a kid standing at the podium, 25 years old. On fire. I mean, talking about the big book, talking about the solution, like regaling where he came from and relating to what he is now, and the contrast and the passion and the sincerity. Now, I'm a cop. I get lied to for a living. All right? It was yellow. No, it frickin' wasn't. You know? It's like, I get lied to on the regular. I get lied to by pros. All right? This kid was telling the freaking truth on my eyes. This kid was telling the truth. I believed him. He was credible. He was telling my story. He was talking about restless, irritable, and discontent. Those three words. Those three words that we've heard so many times in our meetings that we hear read over and over and over again. They almost get cheapened, but you've got to think about that. That is the core of my being, restless, irritable, and discontent. And without a solution, I am that. without hope. Alcohol is not my problem, it's my solution. I'm absent of alcohol, what do I do now? I have to recover. That's the 12 steps. He showed me. Important use of the word, showed. How many of us have been told by parents, siblings, teachers, judges, cops, bosses, ad infinitum, how many people have told us again and again and again with the finger, you better, you better, you better. You're this, you're that. Why, what's the matter? Why don't you just do, you know what you need to do. You're smarter than this. I don't get it. What, are you just retarded? What's the matter with you? Shut up. You know what I mean? And we get told constantly, we're told. This kid, this 25-year-old kid, I got freaking clothes older than this kid. Well, I did. Jeffrey made me throw him out. But this kid showed me. He had the wisdom. He never told me anything. He showed me. He showed me his fourth step. He showed me his friends. He showed me his life. He brought me through the steps. I did a fourth step. It wasn't as bad as I thought. I'm not as bad as I thought, and I'm nowhere near as good as I thought either. I'm right in the middle. I'm a drunk, medium regular. That's it. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous now. Before, I just attended AA meetings, and I thought that was AA. It is not. Meetings are just a place for me, now an alcoholic, sufficiently armed with the facts about myself. Meeting is a place where I can meet someone who needs what I've got. The 12 steps. That's the only reason I went through the 12 steps, is so that I can be a sponsor. And the day that I remember I've heard so many stories like, I remember my sponsor, he freaking... We read the fifth step, and then we set it on fire, and we... Oh, shut the fuck up. Blow it out your ass. Doesn't say that. You saved that fifth step. That's your eighth step, you clown. Now what are you going to do? It's your freaking amends list. Don't throw that away. Don't set that on fire, you boob. Yeah, you want to get all new age and artsy with this shit. Knock yourself out, but stick to the basics, all right? So he showed me. I got my fifth step. From my fifth step, I derived my eighth. I find out the people I've harmed, and now I have to become willing to make amends to these people. And wherever possible, I do. And it's important. Do not do this unsupervised. Very bad. Wicked bad. I mean, like, I've had to make amends for amends I've made. I'm not shitting you. I don't know if you guys can tell, but I'm kind of uncouth. No, really, it's true. And so I recommend that you stay close to the people who love you here. And notice, people love you here. It's not a meritocracy. We don't love you because you're doing well and you checked off all the little boxes and you walk the talk and da da da. No, we just love you because you are us. Because when I came in here, angry, restless, irritable, and discontent, no one told me to screw. They opened their arms and they accepted me. They loved me despite myself, when I could not love myself, when I did not know myself. They loved me. Alcoholics Anonymous is a place where miracles happen. Look around this room. Alkies, tweakers, crackheads, junkies, you name it, we got it. And that's not even covering the psychoses, right? All right? And listen, no sirens. There are no sirens. There's no ambulances coming. There's no police. The SWAT team's not coming. There's a miracle right there. Alcoholics Anonymous showed me how to stop thinking about myself. Alcoholics Anonymous showed me the miracle. The miracle that is AA. When they said, wait, don't leave before the miracle happens, well, no screaming eagle shit. Because the miracle happened in Akron, Ohio in 1935. And it's been happening ever since. When one drunk sat down with another at a kitchen table for free and for fun, and they just did what needed to be done. I lay my life down for my friend. There is no higher love than this. I read that somewhere. I get to lay my life down for my friend 100 times a day. I get to lay my life down for my friend every single day of my life for the rest of my life. I have that opportunity. And as long as I stay in fit spiritual condition, I stay active, I keep my spiritual connection with God clear. I keep my spiritual connection with my sponsor and my sponsees clear. It's important to have both. If you're a part of a pipeline, you got to have an in and an out. So you got to have someone giving you direction, and you have to be giving direction. It's part of the program. It's part of the deal. Bill Wilson wrote, as he's talking about the 12th step in fellowship, he's talking about, this is an experience you must not miss. Bringing a new guy, bringing a new person through this program is the experience you must not miss. Bill Wilson graduated law school. He knew. He used the word must. He wasn't fucking around. All right? Your lawyers don't use the word must without purpose. This is an experience you must not miss. If you're not taking people through this process, you're not in this process. It's that simple. This is a life or death errand. I look over this room and I see some of the most beautiful faces I've ever seen. And what rips my soul out is that there should be more. There should be more. There were more here last year. And there were more here the year before that. And they're dead now because someone fucked the duck. Because someone didn't give a shit. Because someone was too busy. Because someone was too selfish. And that someone is me. And I will never let myself off the hook for that. I will never let myself off the hook for the 15 years I wasted coming to these halls, drinking free coffee, eating shitty stale cookies, and doing nothing. I will never forgive myself for wasting that decade and a half. I have an errand. I have a job today. I'm not waiting for my turn to die. I know why I'm alive, and it's to be of service to the next alcoholic that needs my help. It's as simple as that. My name is Tim. I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com. And look for the donate links. Thank you very much.